Second hour to Aaron Donick and Chase here on this rainy Thursday. Hope everybody's having a good Thursday or overcast, depending on where you are. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, and Chase McCabe with you. Let's bring in the GM, Floyd Reese, brought to you by Turks and Caicos. Floyd Reese Island. No, actually, he's brought to you by Sealmaster, keeping your parking lots looking brand new. Floyd, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys? Staying
that
dry.
would be a great sponsorship, though, wouldn't it?
Oh, geez, would it ever? Yeah.
There has been more scoring in the league than we've ever seen through the first 2 weeks. It is at a high clip in the NFL. What do you make of that?
You know, I think first of all, oddly enough, the offenses I think are coming out maybe a little bit ahead of the defenses, which never happens. You know, it's always the opposite. And I don't know why that is, to be honest. I think on defense, the lack of tackling, I think, you know, the lack of the hitting, like we have been so physical on defense for so long, and yet, you know, I didn't get that sense through the first two games. Not that we're not physical, just not as physical as we were. And I think part of that has to do with, you know, the non-contact for so long. You know, the young quarterbacks are coming in, and I think they're lighting it up pretty well. I think the other thing, and I said this after the first weekend, I think I saw more broken coverages, you know, where a team in a game goes out and they hit two or three touchdown passes with nobody, you know, within 5 yards of them. You know, guys just completely open, running downfield. Some guy thinks they're playing cover two, and they're really playing cover three. And so you've got two guys covering one and nobody covering the other. I saw more of that than I could remember. So I'm sure all of that has to do part of it.
Scoring is at an all-time high. Do you know what is at an all-time low, if I can spit it out, right now through 2 weeks in the NFL?
No.
Penalties. Especially holding penalties. What do you make of that? They're not calling holding penalties, and I'll tell you what made me jump out at that, because at first I was like, you know, we have not been giving Taylor Lewan, after he spoke yesterday, enough love, because what has he not had through the first 2 weeks?
Yeah, not a penalty,
year? Huh? He does not have a penalty yet, and then you do a little bit deeper dive and you realize, oh, and I don't want to take anything away from him.
Right, but nobody's getting any penalties.
But nobody's getting any penalties. They're not calling holding. They're not – the penalties are at an all-time low. What do you make of that? That can't be by coincidence, right? It's not like everybody's come out of this unusual offseason and no preseason and they're just squeaky clean. Clearly, that's a mandate from the league to back off. But what do you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to think it's a conscious effort to – let the games be played, you know, not because, and we said early, you know, that one of the things we'd probably see at the beginning of the season were all of these penalties.
Right.
You know, how were we going to work through the games when they're throwing 14 or 15 flags and, you know, these games are going to be 3.5 hours long and all those kinds of things. And I've seen a couple of times where officials have come out and said, you know, we're going to call the obvious calls, you know, we're not gonna, because let's face it, holding can be called on every snap. And, you know, you just throw the flag and you'd say holding on offensive line and you'd be right. But I think they're kind of stepping back from that and saying, no, if you grab the guy and he goes down, then I'm throwing it. But if it's close and maybe you've just got him hooked a little bit, and you know, where other years you might call it, I think they're kind of letting that go through, letting it play in an attempt to kind of keep the games going.
Yeah, and it may be also attributing to more scoring, right? Quarterbacks are getting a little bit more time.
Yeah,
because they're letting things go a little bit more with the offensive line. I'm going to play a game with you that I played yesterday with Tim Hasselbeck and just see where you rank the team. So I'm going to give you 4 2-0 teams, and you're going to tell me, you're going to rank them 1 through 4, best to worst in your mind of these 2-0 teams. Okay?
Okay.
Titans, Arizona, Las Vegas, and the Rams. So Tennessee, wow. Arizona, Las Vegas, and the Rams, all 2-0 teams, rank best to worst in your mind, 1 through 4.
I would put, I mean, the Titans and the Rams in my mind right now are really close.
Okay.
From a quarterback standpoint and the other things. So I would put them 1 and 1 or 2, either way. I would probably put Arizona last just because I want to see what they can do. They've played 2 good games. Quarterback has played well. I don't think there's any doubt but that, you know, Hopkins is like the signing of the year at this point in time. I mean, he's virtually helped pick that franchise up and kind of move them along. So I think I'd put them last. And then whoever that other team
was. Las Vegas, the Raiders.
Yeah, Vegas, I'd put them third. You know, I really, if it wasn't for the Saints game, and I'm still, you know, in my mind, I'm not sure if that is the Saints playing really, really poorly without Thomas, who, you know, once again looked like a different team without Thomas, or if Vegas is maybe really, really turning the corner.
That's why this game is fun to do, because Tim had Arizona 1 and you have Arizona 4.
Yeah.
That's what's
and I could see why you would. You know, you're looking at Arizona, I mean, they've done nothing but great things. Their quarterback even is looking more Lamar-like, if you will. You know, he's not hesitating to pull it down, and if he's 20 yards out, you know, he can scamper for 20, then I'd rather do that than risk throwing an interception or an incompletion.
Yeah. Okay, now let's do the same with the 0-2 teams, 4 teams that I've picked out. So rank what you think is the best of the 0-2 to the worst. Minnesota, the next opponent for the Titans, Philadelphia, Houston, or Atlanta. Those 4 0-2 teams.
I don't like Philadelphia at all.
Mm.
I don't, you know, I have never been a great Wentz fan for whatever reason. I wish I knew. But I just don't see them finding a way to kind of, you know, it's not like they're going to get a player back and that player coming back is going to change the momentum of the team. So I would probably put them last. You know, Houston is really not playing very well. That being said, they're playing probably the toughest schedule in the league because I think they have like Pittsburgh or somebody like that this week.
Yeah, they do. Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's, you look at them and you think, well, I mean, all those 2-0 teams we just named could easily be sitting there at 0-2, just like Houston. But I would probably put Houston at 3. Who were the other two teams?
Minnesota and Atlanta.
You know, I think I would have to go with Atlanta and then Minnesota.
Oh, so you would have Atlanta 1. He had Atlanta high. I think he had Minnesota, Atlanta. You have Atlanta, Minnesota as 1-2. That's interesting.
Yeah, and for me, I think it's, you know, Atlanta has always had a ton of firepower. And they just haven't, you know, having a defensive coach as a head coach, they've just never quite turned the corner as a defensive team. And to be honest with you, Minnesota has maybe played the worst of all of them. You know, they've just from a pure playing standpoint, but you know that team is better than that. You know Cook is better than that. You know Cousins is better than that. You know Thielman's better than that. And so you look at that and you say, okay, they should be playing better.
We're talking to Floyd Reese, and we do every Thursday at 11 o'clock. Floyd, give us your GMI evaluation of Jacksonville's talent. They had so many guys that were making plays on Sunday, and I was like, I've never heard of these guys. But they got it done. Now, I'm asking myself, is this the Titans just breaking down, or are some of these young guys pretty good pieces for Jacksonville?
You know, I mean, it's probably a combination. I think they did a great job of taking what we were giving them. I think the most important thing of that game was that the Titans were patient. And by that, I mean, you know, I'm not – if we would have gone out there – I mean, everybody wants to talk about Tannehill and how he played, and Tannehill played great. Don't get me wrong. But, he was 18 for 24 for 240 yards, four touchdowns, which is outstanding. But on a normal Sunday, you know, if and I've said this forever, you know, if our quarterback can go 18 to 24 for 240 yards and get a couple of touchdowns and no turnovers, we're probably going to win with our running game and the way we were playing defense. So he played well, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like he picked up the team, went out, and threw for 350 yards and six touchdowns. I think we got into a little bit of the Kansas City syndrome. And by that, I mean we weren't able to get pass rush. So if you're not able to play pass rush, now you've got to try to play coverage. Well, you've got two rookies in there playing. They're not playing very well. So you really can't play coverage. So what are you trying to do? You say, well, I'll blitz. Well, if you blitz, now you're playing man-for-man with those rookie corners. Now what are you going to do? You know, is that the answer? You say, oh, no, I better not do that. What are you going to do? Let's just be patient. Let's force them to go the distance. Let's force them to take all of these little dinky-dunky, you know, completions. Maybe one bounces off somebody's hands and we intercept it, like is what happened, or maybe we tip one and intercept it, which is what happened. So I think they had to be very, very patient. I have to, you know, probably congratulate them on being that patient, because had they tried anything else, I'm not sure we would have had the same outcome.
So now let's look ahead to this week, where you have more of a veteran offense. You have a veteran quarterback. And, of course, you take away Stephon Diggs. They've struggled some, but I'm sure, based on what you just said, there's some things that Minnesota likes about playing a team that doesn't have a ferocious pass rush on paper and some inexperience in the secondary. Also, you've got a desperate team in the Vikings. This seems to be a tricky game because it's easy to say, well, the Vikings are 0-2, but this one looks like it's going to be a tough one.
And I think you use the right word, and tricky. You know, I think it's going to be, they are desperate. You know, 0-2 is bad. 0-3, that may be catastrophic. And so they're saying, okay, now we can't go 0-3. We got to find a way to win this game. And I'm sure they're thinking we're going to have to do some of the things that we can do. We're going to have to take advantage of, you know, this young secondary. If they can't get pass rush, then our quarterbacks are going to have enough time to throw the ball because Minnesota's offensive line is young and, you know, they're trying to kind of feel their way. Dalvin Cook hasn't quite been what we've seen with that offensive line. He's kind of feeling his way. You know, if we get caught in the same situation we were last week where we have no pass rush, and I'm hoping against hope, that some of these other outside linebackers can come in and play so that Landry and Clowney don't have to play 90% of the snaps because, you know, they play about 15% of the snaps. They're worn out. So any pass rush that you maybe hoped to get, you're not going to get because they're pooped. And, you know, what are you going to do? Well, we'll substitute for them. Well, you don't have another guy. You know, you got Correa. He can substitute one of them, but you can't get them both. So hopefully we can go into the game with four or maybe even five outside linebackers. So if nothing else, we can put a fresh player in there. I mean, I am convinced, and I've never seen the guy hasn't played a snap in a Titan helmet, but I'm convinced a fresh Beasley can give you more of a pass rush than Clowney after playing 10 consecutive plays. And I think that hopefully being able to rotate those guys and do some different things with those guys, that you will get the pass rush. And now maybe things will start falling into place.
We're talking to Floyd Reese, the former Titans GM. Hear him today, 2-6 with Jared Stillman on Jared and the GM. So you led me into my question because I was going to bring up the pass rush and how much of a difference Beasley could make. When I have watched Clowney, Floyd, the first couple of weeks, my non-football scouting eyes say he's probably a half step off, and that's just where he is in his conditioning and getting into football shape. Am I close? Do you see that? Do you think he's close to getting to the quarterback, or is it still a little further? He has further to go.
No, I mean, It was funny because Steve Watterson, I heard somebody talking to him yesterday, who was the former strength coach with the Titans. And Steve said to get into for real football shape, it takes 6 or 8 weeks. So it's going to take all of those guys a little bit of time. But I know this. If he is, in fact, a half a step away, which he very well could be, if he was fresh, maybe he picks up that half step. If he's able to, you know, rush better from a different spot, maybe he picks up that half step. And that's why, I mean, I know, in my opinion, rushing a quarterback is the hardest thing to do in the NFL. And when you've got guys that are playing 90% of the snaps this early in the season, and let's keep in mind, our defense has not been, you know, 1-2-3 punt. It's been 1-2-3, oh, here we go again. 1-2-3, oh, no, here we go again. 1-2. So they've been on the field, you know, 10, 12, 14 snaps. Well, at the end of that, you are just dog tired. And it's right. Not you're not in great shape to begin with. It takes you a minute to recover from all that.
Now, on the other side, how would you evaluate the run game? And I don't just mean Henry. I mean from the handoff to Henry to the run protection on the offensive line. But overall, how would you evaluate it through two games?
You know, I think we are we're not seeing what we are used to seeing from Derek, which is the spectacular 40-yard run. Other than that, I mean, I think it's been very, very solid. I think we're the number two rushing team in the league, or Derek's the number two rushing back in the league. So, you know, it's not like you've fallen off the face of the earth. We're just not seeing it the way we used to see it. And I might contend that that's the same thing that we're talking about with Clowney and with Landry, which is, you know, the young kid that's going to be his backup, maybe he'll be able to play this week for the first time. We haven't seen him. And so we're rotating whoever that substitute is, and they're saying, wait a minute now, instead of putting, you know, this guy in, we better keep Derek in because the defense could do this, or we might audible, or we might change things up and he might miss it. So I think we're seeing maybe a little bit of that. I'm not sure that I see the great second-level burst that we've seen from Derek, you know, like at the end of the last two seasons. You know, I thought there was one run last week in the first fourth quarter. I think it was maybe that 13-yard run where I saw a step or two of it, and I said, okay, there it is. But, you know, now you're in a situation where you're trying to win the game and you're probably a little bit more hyped anyway. But I'm not sure he's not going through a little bit of that same thing where, you know, you kind of wear yourself down into a routine and your mind and your heart are saying, hey, I need to get an extra half a step out here someplace. And your legs are saying, no, 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 we're going to save that for later on in the year.
He is the GM, Floyd Reese. You can hear him today at 2 o'clock, presented by Sealmaster, keeping your parking lots looking brand new. Floyd, appreciate it as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys.
The GM, Floyd Reese. Vic Beasley, how close is he to coming back? He's supposed to practice in full for the second straight day. We'll discuss that when we come back. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Three of your favorite game, you know what that is, Silly Underdog Picks. It's open. Ready for your picks. Make your picks. Remember, you get three picks, you the listeners. You've always had three, but they've always been on the college football side of things. Now you get college and pro. So three, however you want to do it. Now the college football schedule is the biggest it's been since they've come back, the return to play. So you got that this week. And then, of course, you've got a full slate of NFL games. So use it however you want with your three picks. And don't forget, you can get in there and make your pick now. This week's winner will receive a 10-roof gift card. And all you have to do is go to thegamenashville.com or ESPN The Game Nashville app and sign up to make your picks today. We will make our picks on air coming up at high noon.
While we were speaking,
yeah, I bet you can't. I can. I can wait this week. But I'm excited to make new picks, so that's the beauty. 1 week, you don't have a great week, you flush, and you move on. The Titans, they're trying to get to 3-0. They're trying to move on and do something they haven't done since 2008 when they start off the season 10-0. And right now they're trying to start off 3-0, which if you look at the numbers, start like that, especially with an expanded playoff spot, you got to like your chances. Things would really have to go south for you the rest of the season. But Titans head coach Mike Vrabel just recently, in the last 30 minutes or so, spoke with the media about this upcoming contest against Minnesota, and here's what he had to say.
Mike, good morning. You mentioned the issues in the run game. How much of that is the not having preseason games? And when you look at the issues, how close do you think your team is to cleaning up some of those details?
Derek didn't take a snap in the preseason last year, and I don't know how many plays our starters played in preseason, but that's certainly not the issue. We just have to do things better, continue to work on our techniques, continue to work on our understanding and the details, and try to get things going.
Yeah, Coach, in your defensive room, how do you go about grading the pass rush outside of sacks? Like when you mark accomplishments for the guys, what are some of the other measurables that you use?
Did they win? Did they affect the throw? Did they disrupt the timing? Did they execute the game, or stunt the way that we're coaching it?
And then if I could get a question on Eric Kendricks, he's traditionally been a really good pass defender. What is it about him that makes him so good in pass defense for the Vikings?
Just a very instinctive player. He's quick. He's athletic and certainly has a nose for the football, whether you're running it or you're trying to throw it.
Hey, Mike, just curious, what has, the protocols, how has that changed maybe day after game for you? Maybe how do Mondays and Tuesdays look different now compared to years past? And how does that working for you so far?
We're not able to have the full team meeting. You can only have meetings of 15 players. We're going to have, we've been having Monday off this past Monday. Allow our players to have the day off, come in, get treatment, and then come back in on Tuesday with allow us to meet with a little larger group. I think the protocols are the day after the game. You can be in here, but you can't have meetings for more than 15 players.
And one other question for a different subject. With the new practice squad rules and maybe some more veterans on it and the likelihood maybe of guys getting called up for game days greater, do you approach anything different from a practice week standpoint as far as incorporating those guys, or is it still business as usual?
Well, I think that they have, you have to be careful how much work those guys are getting and taking away from some of the other guys that are on the, immediate 53-man roster. But they're still expected to understand the game plan. They travel, and I think that they understand that they could be called up, as late as Saturday or even Sunday morning.
You guys obviously scouted Gladney and Dantzler as you were looking for cornerback of your own and Fulton. What's your sense of them at this point while the Vikings are revamping their secondary?
Good young players, active. Their DBs are all very good tacklers. That's the one thing I can appreciate. They play multiple coverages. So again, it's like a lot of young players in this league. There's some good plays that show that the ability is there and that they flash. And I'm sure there's some plays that they'd like to have back they're running a lot of different coverages. I know that Mike asked a lot of those guys and asked them to fit in the run and be physical, but also, play their fair share of man coverage and match coverage.
You've obviously got your hands full. Is there any point during the week where you have any kind of conversations with John about college scouting, or are you completely uninvolved in that until the season's over?
I would say right now my focus is on the football team and the National Football League, and college scouting will we'll get into that when the season's over.
Mike, I was wondering, I know obviously last month with the shooting death of Jacob Blake, you know, created a sort of a different environment out there, a lot of, you know, meetings, discussions, some productive steps. Wondering if the events in Louisville yesterday have led to any similar types of discussion events, if you fielded any, you know, requests for players to talk about that at all.
Not in a open forum of in our team meeting setting. I'm sure there's a bunch of emotions. There's a wide range of emotions that go on as events happen across, you know, our country. I think that our leadership and our players always had an open forum to discuss things that hasn't come up as of yet. But we'll always have a place to be able to do that here.
Sure. One more on a football note, I guess. Darrington Evans, quite a, you know, college background in terms of being a kick returner. I wonder, you know, if when he's healthy, you guys were to give him a shot there, how much do you have to weigh the fact that you never got a chance to see him in a, you know, even in a preseason game or anything like that versus what potential he might have?
I think we'd like to get him out there first, and then we can figure out what positions he's going to play.
Hey, Coach, now that you've had Vic as a full participant through a handful of practices, just kind of curious as to what you've seen from him in terms of growth on the field.
I'd say that'd be similar to Darrington. I'd like to see him out there and then see where we can put him.
Mike, on the Isaiah Wilson front, he's obviously still on the COVID list. I think time-wise he's eligible to come off. Can you give us an update on where he is?
He's still on the COVID list.
Hey, Mike. Buck actually took my question. So I see you're in your office there. I'm just curious. You know, I see memorabilia photos, that sort of thing. Do you have a prized possession in there or something that maybe means more to you than the rest?
In this TV that I watch film on, that'd be at the top of the list there.
That's head coach Mike Vrabel, his press conference today.
That was some quick hitters there. Yeah. Not a lot of detail on the last couple questions there. Interesting.
Belichickian, I would say.
Very Belichickian.
Yes. In particular with the last three, not offering a whole lot of Vic Beasley, kind of a we've been through this. But it does sound like Vic Beasley will be in the plan on some level on Sunday. He's practicing now. If there's no setback, even if it's just for 10 plays, I would have to think he is going to be on the field. I could be wrong because, you know, if you activate him, you got to deactivate somebody else. So you have that. Isaiah Wilson not willing to share anything on – I guess it's no status change. He's still on the COVID list. But I don't know the details of what it takes to stay on the COVID list. Hope,
by the way, he's on still two has list. It? He's on does two list. He's on more than just the COVID list.
Yeah, he's on the list.
He's on the poop list, too.
Right, but to actually be on the COVID list, do you have to still have symptoms? Do you still have to – I mean, they're testing guys every day. Does he still have the virus? And if not, then how long can you keep a guy on that list?
I don't know. I'm not sure on that.
Well, they can keep him on the poop list as long as they want.
Right, but I'm talking about just from a roster standpoint. There's paperwork that has to be done. I just don't know. I'm not saying there's any funny business going on, but you know, he's on the COVID list. This has been what 2 weeks
since
he's been put on there. And as Terry asked in his question, he's eligible to come off. So where do you put him if he's not on that list?
Are you really going to activate Vic Beasley for 10 snaps? I find that hard to believe. You're going
well,
to waste
need
their
more
roster
than 10.
Spot
I'm just
for
saying,
10 snaps.
I'm just throwing that as an arbitrary number. I'd like to see more, but it certainly doesn't sound like either he or Darrington Evans has wowed anybody.
Darrington Evans especially. That was a basically, yeah, well, you know.
Let's just get
I'll let you know
first.
Whatever he gets on the field.
Yeah.
Which
the other
I mean,
part of it is kick returns are just not a big part of the game anymore. It's
no.
sad, but it's just not something that you. It can still make a big difference in a game on an odd Sunday, but it's just not like it was on a week in, week out basis.
Yeah, I mean, I I understand the frustration that you want these guys out there. And so there's really not that much information that we don't already know. But at the same time, I mean, come on. You got to answer these questions. I mean, they've been practicing. At least give us something of, okay, do you feel a little more confident about what you've seen the last couple of days on the practice field that they're going to be able to help you on Sunday? But that's where I get irritated with the short answers. And, you know, I laughed. You can ask Elijah. I laughed with his answer to Terry's question, because I knew that's exactly what he was going to say, that he was going to go, well, he's still on the COVID list. And, like, okay, great. We knew that. Thanks. We can read. But anyway, that's my rant. Darren, your thoughts.
Well, I'm trying to go through in my head just kind of how do you approach this week? Because we've already discussed it. We've been discussing it since Monday. We just hit on it with Floyd when we started this hour. I don't really know. In fact, I'll play the game with you guys. It's pretty interesting. That's why I did it with Tim Hasselbeck yesterday and then Floyd Reese today. Because, right, it's everything is in the eye of the beholder. And the part that I want to get back to is with the 0-2 teams, everybody seems to have Minnesota there at the top of the 0-2 teams. And I'm starting to, you know, obviously we'll have a better answer on Monday show after we've seen the game on Sunday. I'm just, with their injuries and what I've seen through the first 2 weeks, this is not the same Vikings team that we've been seeing for the last 3 to 4 years. I don't think. It doesn't feel that way. It doesn't feel that way to me. So everybody keeps ranking them. Tim had them 1, as in the best of the worst. Floyd had them 2 in the best of the worst. How do you guys rank Minnesota in my 0-2 teams of those 4? Where would you put Minnesota?
I don't think they have what they've had the last couple of years. I think it's going to be a challenge, but I still think they're good enough to win the game on Sunday in this desperate mode that they're in. And Floyd turned the light on for me as a big concern. This is where the big concern is. You have a veteran quarterback who struggled. You have a running back in Dalvin Cook who is a great player. We know that. It's going to take something to curtail him. And you've got a pass rush that hasn't done anything yet with the Titans. And you couple poor pass rush with shaky, inexperienced defensive backs. That's a recipe for the Vikings to have a good day on offense. The Jaguars, with their no-name guys, had a pretty productive day offensively. That's got to be a concern for Mike Vrabel, unless somebody like a Vic Beasley gives them a little boost, or somebody has a great individual game. But Steve Watterson, that was good info from Floyd Reese, and a lot of people know this, but you know, being out there is one thing, but being in true football shape is another.
What'd he say, 6 weeks?
6 weeks, and I think that's a fair way to put it. And then there's the 6 weeks of wear and tear that you might pick up bumps and bruises and minor injuries during games. That's what you're looking for, is to avoid that and then really have your legs going. That's when you start playing great. That's when you're in true football shape. But a lot of those guys are not there. We know Clowney's not there. We know Beasley is not going to be there anytime soon, but they got to try to get production out of those guys.
So you said, so you're for Minnesota, Philadelphia, Atlanta, and then
Houston.
And Houston.
Tim had Houston last. I think Floyd had him second to last.
Yeah, I'd probably have Philadelphia last.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Me too. I
picked
Carson
to
Wentz.
Eat.
Carson Wentz is a real issue.
Yeah.
It is a real issue in Philadelphia.
Well, it's not just him in a vacuum. It's him plus all of the noise that you have to overcome with the fans there that are all over him. That's and the expectations. That's a bad combination.
But he's been awful, Willie. He is deserving right now of them being all over him.
Right, and that makes it, I think, a little harder mentally to overcome it.
I'd go from worst to first. I'd go Philadelphia, Houston, Minnesota, Atlanta.
Wow, you have Minnesota. I mean, you have Atlanta at the top.
Yeah.
That surprises me.
I don't have them that high.
I don't either.
Yeah.
I have Philadelphia last, Atlanta third. I have Atlanta third, and then I have Philadelphia last, Atlanta third. I still think I've got Houston tops, Minnesota second.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't. I can't put Houston at the top.
Like, how do you judge Houston on playing Kansas City and Baltimore? And, oh, by the way, week three, they're probably going to be 0-3. You get Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Kansas City. Those could be the three best teams in the conference.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Two, we know. Pittsburgh, you can make a case, maybe the third best.
You're
like,
right.
How do you really judge them off that?
I just – Yeah, I know. It's hard to say.
And
that
what
the
quarterback
weapons
do you trust
clicked.
More? Deshaun Watson, Kirk Cousins, Matt Ryan, or Carson Wentz? Deshaun Watson is number one for me. I trust him the most.
And I know why you're asking it, because it's hard to rank them when you break it down individually like that.
If you watch, for example, Deshaun Watson, this is where the question gets difficult. Deshaun Watson is a great player, but any quarterback who was under the heat that he was under last Sunday, if you watch that game, it was like one Mississippi, two Mississippi, I got to throw it. I mean, he was thrown off his back foot. There were three guys in his face for a ton of plays once they got behind. It was almost impossible. I'm sitting there, and I know Chase was probably doing the same thing. I'm looking for garbage points in fantasy, so I'm watching the game late. Yeah. Number one, Baltimore never let him have the ball because they just kept running it and chewing up the clock. And then when they did get the ball, it's not like they were facing a prevent defense. That offensive line was getting absolutely dominated by the Ravens. But it's the Ravens. So how much better will it look against the Steelers? Well, the Steelers have a pretty good defense.
Maybe the best in the league.
Yeah. So I don't know if it's going to get any easier for Deshaun on Sunday.
That's funny.
What I said. I think they're going to be 0-3, but I'm not
willing
to say.
I still think he's a great quarterback.
I think they're the worst. They're the best of the worst still.
It's
they
funny.
They could be 0-3.
I felt when I gave my answers, like, all right, because I was going through it in my head. I go, I feel good about this answer. And then listening to this conversation, I no longer feel good about my answer. Because that's how – so you may be right. When you base it on who Houston has had to go up against in the first now 3 weeks – or, I mean, what's going to be the first 3 weeks, you make a very good point that they're at the top of the list. Atlanta, I just – even though, yes, it's embarrassing, it's bad, that the lead that they had and how they gave that up to Dallas, I still think they – of the teams we're talking about, they're decent, but – Yeah. Okay. I'm changing my answer. I'm moving Houston up. I'm moving Houston up to number one. You've convinced me.
The best of the worst?
Yes.
Okay. So, the pressing matter is, what are we going to see from the Vikings on Sunday? Does it concern you? I think I would have to say my number one concern is lack of pass rush, some inexperience in the secondary, which I don't know if is going to get a whole lot better this week. I know Malcolm Butler is still banged up. He's not 100%. He's fighting through something. I think Kirk Cousins, who is, you know, maybe not spectacular, but he's a smart veteran quarterback who's had success. I think that could be a tough matchup.
I don't trust him, though. I don't trust him.
If you don't get a pass rush and you have inexperienced players that you're throwing at, that's a formula for a good day passing. Plus, I got Dalvin Cook as my running back.
As long as he doesn't say, you like that, do you like that, the Titans win. We'll come back, wrap up the second hour next.
Walk off.
Don't forget, Titans fans, Corner Pub is the place to check out the game and watch the game. Locations in Bellevue, Brentwood, or downtown. Don't miss the best pregame show in town. Yep, that'll be live from Corner Pub Bellevue. That's this week's location. From 9:30 until 11:30 a.m. That's getting you ready for kickoff for the Titans and the Vikings. Pregame show features Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, who we spoke to earlier this hour, and forever Titans wide receiver Chris Sanders, who we will speak to in about 10 minutes for Silly Underdog Picks. And that's all brought to you by Wholesale Inc., powered by Rumble On, and Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers. Want to throw out a happy birthday to one Eddie George.
Edward.
Eddie. Eddie. Yeah, Eddie George today. Happy birthday. Any idea how old he is?
I was just about to ask.
Like don't cheat. Don't cheat.
Yeah, he looks like he could still play.
It makes you mad when you hear this. It really does. Like, that's just not fair.
Okay, I'm just guessing he would be about 44.
Okay, Chase?
Yeah, I was in that range. I'll say 46.
47 today.
Okay.
Did you cheat, Chase?
Nope.
47. That's just not fair. To look like that at 47, good for him, but man. He's always just looked like somebody chiseled him, you know, like he was a sculpture. Yeah. It was just like a ball of clay, and they chiseled out Eddie George. As long as I've ever known him. I mean, that's just – and he still looks like that today. It's ridiculous. By the way, yeah. He is a nomination for the Pro Football Hall of Fame, as I brought up.
Yeah.
Earlier in the week, back on Monday.
That's a cool group to be in, those five.
Yeah.
That you named, you know, Steve, Eddie, Mace, but Gary Anderson and who was the last? I'm blanking on that.
Blanking too.
Absolutely blanking on the last one. But anyway.
I don't remember.
Do you think of the big three, the Steve, Eddie, Mace, any of them get in at some point?
Well,
I feel like Eddie's
this,
got the best shot.
The system is flawed. I mean, I understand that. It's just like anything, right? I mean, ratings for television, ratings for radio, just everything. The systems are flawed. Like, it's like you're a small group determines something. So you've got this small group of folks that get in a room and vote. I mean, a small group. Just think about it. What's the number in baseball, Willie, of writers and people who vote in baseball?
Loneal. Loneal's the other one.
Loneal, thank you.
How could we forget Loneal?
Jeez, how could we? Shame on us.
I don't know the number. It's bigger, I think. It's a
different
system.
Oh, it's way bigger.
There's a lot of writers. There's hundreds.
Yes.
And it's not that big in football.
No, it's like 42? 42 people in a row.
Right. So this would be my answer to the question. Number one, the system changes over time. It evolves, right? Regardless of how you do it, opinions change over time, right? And you also have to fight, where do you want to have the line be? Is it the hall of only the greatest of the great? Or over time, do you sort of move the bar down a little bit and allow more people in? I think that's what's happened in baseball to some degree. There was a point in time I would have said, Ted Simmons, he's off the radar completely. He's gone. He's never going to get in. Ted Simmons is in the Hall of Fame now for baseball.
Yeah.
Maybe you appreciate some of the things
the
that he did more.
The one that just got in, we're like, well, there's the new standard.
Harold Baines. No
Harold
question.
Baines.
That was a game changer because as Chris Domino had this quote, and I think he's dead on, I mean, right when it happened, he said, now every team has three more guys, every single team, three more guys that think they should get in because they were better than Harold Baines. So I'd say today I have a hard time seeing any of those guys, D-Mace, Frank Wycheck. Frank would be another guy that I think has excellent credentials, but I don't see getting in. D-Mace, I think, is underappreciated with – what he did in the context of what offenses he played in. And then there's Steve and Eddie, who I think have maybe the best case, but I don't see him getting in. But over time, I think it could evolve. Maybe the hall gets a little bit bigger, and maybe you lower the – maybe there's a Harold Baines that changes the game, and those guys find a way in. So I still think there's hope down the road, but I just don't think it's going to be anytime soon. I'd be surprised.
The thing that I think Derek gets robbed of, and he shouldn't, is people overlook the special teams numbers. And I think the special teams numbers should factor in. I had this so I was listening to our buddy Nick Cale.
Well, first of all, if you're doing your homework and you're a presenter, if that isn't brought in, then he's getting robbed.
Agreed.
He's getting
That's my
cheated.
Point.
Yeah.
And I think that happens.
I don't know, and you don't know whether that's getting brought up or not in that room.
Right. It should. And I wonder, you know, Tim Brown got in. And Tim Brown's numbers, I mean, he's got 100 touchdowns. He's got almost 15,000 yards, over 1,000 receptions. I mean, that's obviously, you know, very, very, very good. But he had special teams numbers as well. They finally put him in. Derek is not too far off from Tim Brown when it comes to receptions. The only number that hurts him, and this is a product of the offenses, are the touchdowns.
Yep.
He has 66 touchdowns. And so that hurts him. But the special teams numbers, I think, should help him. And I was listening to Nick Cale do a radio in Atlanta, and he was talking about Roddy White because Roddy White's up for it too. I think Roddy White is good.
I don't think
he's Hall of Famer.
Like, I'd take Derek Mason over Roddy White.
Absolutely.
All day long.
Absolutely.
Right. And that's why you can't put just catches and yards side by side and compare, because you have to compare eras. You have to compare offenses and the style of those offenses. Right? I mean, Roddy
sure.
White, you know, in a certain year, his numbers, I'm sure, look great because they were flinging it all over the place. But that's why I say for D-Mace, you say, okay, 8,000-yard seasons. I'm like, okay, that's good. But also 8,000-yard seasons for running-based offenses.
Yes,
right.
Correct. And that should count for a lot.
Totally.
Yes.
But does it?
He never played in a high-flying, wide-open offense that was just throwing the ball 40-plus times a game. Never did.
Right. Is it just like in baseball, I think over time they've done a better job of putting in context a 30 home run season in 1980 versus a 30 home run season in 2004, right? Where more homers are being hit. 30 home runs for a season is not anything to, you know, not anything to sneeze at today, but it's still not what it meant way back, where you could lead the league if you hit 38 or 40 in a given year.
But a player should not be penalized because he got drafted by a certain franchise.
And, right. No. And you have to put everybody's
stats. And then he went to another franchise. Like, it's not a player's fault for the system that they played in. He made the most of what he was given by a lot, right?
Right.
He shouldn't have even been able to put up those numbers.
Do you think if Derek Mason, let's take the same franchise, if he had played in the run and shoot with Warren Moon on that club, do you think he would have had more yards, more catches? Absolutely, right?
I don't know how in the world you could come to any other conclusion.
100%. There's no question he would have had more.
Now, with Eddie, the argument that I will always make with Eddie is, I mean, he's got over 10,000 yards rushing and 68 touchdowns. Terrell Davis is in. Now, granted, Terrell Davis has rings, but it's an individual award. So if you're strictly looking at the numbers and the longevity of Eddie, if Terrell Davis is in and he didn't play as long, to me, Eddie should be in.
I didn't love the Terrell Davis because
that's longevity a little bit of Harold Baines,
should,
isn't it?
Yes. Well,
and Gale
no,
Sayers
because
would be
Harold Baines was more the opposite. He was longevity. Terrell Davis was like a small window. He dominated. Well, how many players have come through the NFL and had a five-year window where they dominated?
Yes.
Does a five-year window get you in the hall?
Right. It moved the line like Harold.
It was really a four-year window.
It opened up the discussion for way more people, including Eddie George, I think, the Terrell Davis, because Eddie's thing was consistency over a 10-year period, right?
Yep.
And this is what you can't quantify. Is if you look at Eddie's numbers, they're really good for about 10 years, which is more than most backs. He doesn't get up into that Franco Harris or Jim Brown, Emmitt Smith. You know, he's not quite there. And so he falls short there with the longevity. He doesn't have the gaudy yards per carry. But what it doesn't quantify is what Eddie did every week. Like, the other team had to stop Eddie, right? Everything else on the offense opened up because of what teams had to do to stop Eddie. True?
Yep. Very much so.
And you can't, when you say, okay, he had 3.9 yards a carry in this year or that year, he had 1,200 yards. It may not look like Derrick Henry's numbers last year, right? But it still had a huge impact on how good the Titans were.
How many players have we talked to over the years that played with Eddie and said this story? teams knew exactly what we were going to do, and yet they still couldn't stop it.
Right.
They knew exactly what the Titans were going to do and still could not. So, in fact, I know we had an offensive lineman say there were times we felt like we could tell them where Eddie was coming, and they still couldn't do anything about it.
Right.
That's impressive. All right, we'll come back. Silly underdog picks to start the third hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.